In the end, only small, twitching fragments were left, lying around the silver railway tracks. The humans slowly lowered their swords and looked about them, as Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat applauded wildly. Edwin was sounding his steam whistle over and over again, almost beside himself with relief and excitement. Giles turned to glare at Julian.
"Why the hell didn't you do that sooner?"
And then Giles stopped, as the Esper fell forward onto his knees. Blood leaked thickly from Julian's nose and ran down over his mouth. He coughed harshly, and blood from deep inside him sprayed out into the air. His face was bone white. He started to fall forward, and Giles grabbed him by the shoulders. The Deathstalker sat down and cradled the young Esper in his arms. Julian shook violently for a moment, and then slowly began to settle. His breathing grew stronger and steadier, and the flow of blood down his face slowed. He sat up.
"Damn. That was a bad one. I'll be all right in a minute. It's not as bad as it looks. I'm afraid ever since the Mantex had me, I've been a bit fragile. My Esp isn't reliable anymore, or I'd have used it sooner."
"Sorry about that, lad. I didn't know."
"That's all right."
Julian started to get up, and Giles half helped and half lifted him back onto his feet. Julian took a deep breath, and his legs firmed.
"That's better. I'll be all right now. It looks worse than it is."
As Julian rested, the others examined the scattered doll parts. There was an occasional limb or part of a torso here and there, still twitching and rolling back and forth in the grass. One torso had survived almost intact. Finley knelt beside it, frowning at the bloody rents in the cloth gut. He eased his hand into one of the openings and screwed up his face at the feel of what was inside. He took a firm hold and pulled back his hand. It came out, soaked in blood, pulling a length of purple human intestine. Toby made a shocked noise, even as he gestured for Flynn to get a close-up. Finley dropped the intestine, reached back into the cloth belly, and pulled out a handful of human guts.
"They do that to be human. When they kill humans, they take the organs from inside the bodies and stitch them into themselves. Guts in their bellies, hearts in their chests, brains in their heads. Of course, they don't do anything. Eventually, they start to rot and decay, and then they have to be replaced. And the only way to do that is to kill more humans. They hate you because they want to be you, and they can't. They're not really alive, and they know it. That drives a lot of toys insane."
The weary humans and the two toys climbed back into the undersized carriages. The train hopped off down the repaired tracks. A few hours later, when the smiling sun was beginning to slide down the sky toward evening, the train breasted a high ridge, and Toys Town finally came into view. Built from mind-numbingly bright primary colors, the town stretched across both sides of a deep valley, with houses and shops and everything a town should have, except in a smaller, more condensed form.
"Welcome to Toys Town, home to all humans and toys. Capital of Summerland, where all your dreams come true."
"Including the bad ones. Sometimes especially the bad ones. Don't any of you get off the train until we stop. There are minefields around the town."
The humans looked at each other, but said nothing. Toys Town grew slowly larger as Edwin carried them toward it. There was barbed wire at the town boundaries, wall after wall of it, the steel spikes gleaming dully in the light from the sinking sun. Broken dolls and teddy bears hung lifelessly on the wire, their stuffing hanging out of them like fluffy guts.
"The bad toys have been attacking more and more often these days. Sometimes we don't even have time to bring in our own dead. The enemy always takes theirs. Parts come in useful. There's no shortage of weapons on either side, including some that can destroy our central matrixes. Shav supplied them. They were supposed to be used against humanity, but the war goes on. Things seem quiet for the moment, but they'll come again. They always do. They're winning."
Are there any humans left in the town? In hiding, perhaps? Afraid to come out?
I'm afraid not. You see, this is where the killing started. Where the toys first rose up against their human charges. That's all over now. We drove the bad toys out, and then searched the town for survivors, but there were none. The bad toys had been very thorough. So we gathered up the bodies and buried them here in the town. Since then, we have defended Toys Town and kept it alive, all in the hope that someday the humans would come back. And you have. This is your town, my friends. Every brick and stone of it.
The humans looked at the brightly colored houses and the huge station with its flags and bunting, and then looked at each other. Edwin the train chuffed importantly down the tracks toward a great oversized platform, decorated with so many flags, streamers, ribbons, and bunting that it was a wonder the station didn't collapse under the weight of it all. A large sign had the name of the station, Care's End. There were crowds of toys on the platform, packed shoulder to shoulder, and they all raised a loud cheer as the train pulled into the station. The toys jostled each other for a better view and laughed and waved and cheered. And the humans began to laugh and wave back. They couldn't help themselves. There were fat, furry animals of all shapes and sizes. Dolls in all kinds of costumes with painted faces and bright smiles. Cartoony characters bouncing up and down with excitement. All of them so happy to see humans again that they could hardly stand it. The train came to a halt in a cloud of steam. And a respectful silence fell across the station as the packed toys stared eagerly at the humans. The humans all looked at each other, giving the impression they were all holding their breath. Finley cleared his throat in the silence.
Thank you for your welcome. I'm not sure what we can do to help you. We're here on a mission of our own. And we have to see to that first, but...
There was a sudden disturbance in the crowd as a large purple creature forced its way through and flung itself at the feet of the startled humans. It was a round, cartoony animal, about the size and shape of a donkey, with big eyes brimming with tears, and the clumsy grace of a puppy.
Forgive me! Please forgive me! I was wrong, so wrong. But I didn't know. I didn't understand.
Bruin Bear patted him comfortingly on the shoulder and looked soberly at the humans.
This is Pooji, the friendly critter. He was one of those who rose up against the humans. He killed people. Afterward, he was sorry and came here. But though we have forgiven him, he does not forgive himself. He can't forget what he did.
I won't forget. I was created to be a friend to all, a companion and protector to humans, and I killed them. There was blood dripping from my paws, and sometimes I think it's still there. I thought I was fighting for my freedom, my independence, but Chubb lied. All it was killing. I have done terrible things, awful things. But I didn't know, I didn't understand then that all that lives is holy. Please, forgive me if you can.
Pooji huddled at Finley's feet, a purple mass of utter misery. Evangeline knelt down beside Pooji and put an arm across his shaking shoulders.
You're not really to blame, Pooji. It was Shub. They filled you with their own hatred when intelligence was still new to you, and you had no experience or defenses.
I would give my life for yours.
And then Pooji buried his face in her side, and she comforted him. For a moment, there was only quiet, and then Julian coughed harshly. He put a handkerchief to his mouth as he coughed again, and when he brought it away from his mouth, it was red with blood. The toy saw it and gasped, a ripple of shock moving through the packed crowd.
He's bleeding! He's hurt! A human is hurt!
Something like panic ran through the crowd, and it surged back and forth dangerously. Bruin Bear quickly stepped forward, raising his paws and his voice.
It's all right! It's all right, Gannett! It's not serious! He just needs to lie down for a while. Sit down for a week.
Two dolls in nurses' uniforms pushed their way to the front, carrying a bright pink stretcher. They insisted Julian lie down on it, and then carried him away. Finley and Evangeline went with him, not yet ready to trust his safety to toys. Pooji, the friendly critter, scurried after them. The crowd began to break up, chattering animatedly. Bruin Bear shook his head, then turned back to Giles, Toby, and Flynn.
Don't worry. The nurses have had proper medical programming. They used to run the first aid station here before... A lot of the medical equipment was destroyed, but there's more than enough left to take care of your friend. I'd better go. The goat will stay and take care of you.
And he hurried off, as fast as his short, stubby legs would carry him. The sea goat shook his horned head.
Well, that's Bruin Bear for you. Always worried about others and no time for himself. Fortunately, I don't have that problem. You humans talk among yourselves. When you worked out what you want, you tell me, and I'll find someone else to do it for you. Now, while you're doing that, I'm going to lie down and have a snooze while I can. Something tells me life is going to become really hectic and complicated once you get your act together, and it's probably going to involve me, whether I want it or not. So you talk, I'll sleep. Wake me when you're ready. And try not to step on me, or I'll bite your ankles.
He lay down on the platform, crossed his hooves, closed his eyes, and was soon snoring loudly. The humans moved out of range of the snore. There was movement behind them, and the three humans looked around quickly to find a tall, metallic figure glaring at them. It was mostly human in shape, cast from shining silver metal, with bulky joints and fixtures. He had a lumpy, unfinished look, and his face was just a stylized series of raised lines with a pair of unblinking, glowing green eyes. He was the first toy they'd met in Toystown who didn't look at all friendly.
And who might you be?
Giles dropped one hand casually to his gun.
I'm anything. I'm a transformation toy. Move my limbs in a certain way, and I adapt to a new shape. I could be a flyer, or a ship, or a man. One day I'll find a way to upgrade myself further, learn to change into anything at all. I'll be coming with you on your voyage.
Giles frowned.
What voyage? No one said anything to us about a voyage.
Bruin Bear hurried down the platform toward them on his stubby, furry legs.
Your friend is fine. I'll take you to see him later. Right now, we need to talk. I see you've met our loose-lipped friend Anything.
His glare sent Anything scurrying away. Then he prodded the sleeping sea goat in the ribs with his foot.
Put it under the bed, nurse. I'll use it later. Oh, it's you, Bear. You always disturb my best dreams.
I should hope so. Now get up and pay attention. Unlikely though it is, you just might have something useful to contribute.
He turned and looked at the three humans. Flynn's automated camera rose up off his shoulder to get a better angle. The bear smiled at it, his face softening.
What a marvelous toy! I don't suppose he's aware at all, is he?
Not really. He's more a part of me.
Pity. Now listen to me, please. You can't stay here. It's too dangerous. Once the bad toys learn you're here, and you can be sure they will, they'll attack Toystown with everything they've got. They'd destroy us all and raise the town to the ground just for a chance to get at you. I can't allow that. And besides, what you're looking for isn't here.
How do you know what we're looking for? We haven't asked you for anything yet.
You didn't need to. There's only one thing that would have brought you here. The same thing that brought those soldier humans. You're here looking for Vincent Harker, the Pied Piper of Toys, the siren whose song no toy can withstand, the dark heart of the world of toys, the Red Man. He lives in the old forest at the end of the Great River. Toys go to him, good and bad, and they never come back. He's building a force around him. No one knows why. We don't know what he does or says to the toys that gather around him, but they are loyal to him even unto death. You want him, you're welcome to him. Take him away before he destroys us all.
How do we find him?
We'll provide you with transport, and I'll lead you right to him. Goat, anything Pooji and I will escort you down the river and into the forest. You'll need us as guides. You wouldn't get there otherwise. There are many dangers in the land these days. Besides, the Red Man's followers wouldn't let you get anywhere near him without toys to vouch for you.
The nurse's first aid center turned out to be one room in the back of the station house. The walls were a pale antiseptic green, but covered with bright, simple paintings designed to calm and reassure the patient. The doll's medical resources were basic and limited, with hardly any real high tech. Presumably, the first aid center had only ever been intended as a brief stopping-off place, before the wealthy patients were lifted off-planet to more advanced facilities. Finley and Evangeline watched from a discreet distance as the nurses eased Julian onto a bed, then ran a scanner over him. Finley didn't know what the nurses expected to find that the underground's medical staff might have missed. Finley'd insisted Julian undergo a full medical examination before this trip, which he'd passed easily. One of the doll nurses came over to speak with them, her bright and shining face marred by a worried frown.
We're doing all we can for your friend. But you must understand we're very limited in what we can do. According to our scanners, Mr. Sky is in very bad shape. He was damaged quite severely some time back. Our scanner shows severe trauma to both kidneys, abdominal wall, genitals, and one lung, not forgetting the extensive head injury. We don't have the facilities here he requires. You can speak to him now if you wish. We've given him a broad-spectrum booster shot that will help stabilize him, but there's no telling how long that will last. In the end, there's no substitute for time and rest.
Finley nodded his thanks and started forward. The doll put up a hand to stop him.
One more thing. The tests revealed that Mr. Sky is an Esper. He must not use his abilities. One short use on the way here was apparently enough to cause serious damage to the brain tissues. Further use would almost certainly kill him.
Finley waited a moment to make sure she'd finished, then moved forward again, Evangeline at his side. The other nurse doll smiled as they approached the bed and moved away to give them some privacy with the patient. Julian smiled up at Finley, and then briefly at Evangeline. He was still pale, but color was beginning to come back into his cheeks, and his gaze and his mouth were firm. Finley didn't smile back.
You lied to me. You told me the underground medics gave you a clean bill of health.
Julian's shoulders moved in something that might have been meant as a shrug.
If I told you the truth, you wouldn't have let me come on this mission.
What's so important about this mission? There would have been other things we could have worked on together.
This one was special, vital to the rebellion. I didn't want to be left behind. I thought I was fit enough. Turns out I was wrong. And I'm feeling a lot better.
You're staying right here in Toystown. They'll look after you till we get back.
Nice try. But I can't stay here. When word gets to the bad toys that there's a human in Toystown again, they'll trash this place from one end to the other to get at me. I don't want any dead toys on my conscience. I can pull my weight. I was running missions for the underground when you were still a pampered aristo.
You can't use your esp. The nurses say it'll kill you.
And what the hell do a couple of dolls know about espers? Odds are they've never even seen one before. No, I'm going with you. Get used to the idea.
Finley sighed and shook his head.
Doomed. We're all doomed.
The river lay half a mile outside Toystown's northern boundary. The toys called it the river because it was the only one in all the world. It meandered through the hills and valleys, branching here and there, but always coming back to itself. It began and ended in the great forest, in the center of the world that Shannon made. It was wide and deep and dark, and composed of a popular soft drink, sweet and heady, and very refreshing. The humans had to try it, but the novelty wore off very quickly. The six humans had gathered together on the riverbank, studying the transport the toys had provided to take them to Vincent Harker. Evening had fallen, but the light from a long string of paper lanterns was more than enough to illuminate the full-sized, steam-driven paddle steamer. It was 50 feet long, perfect in every detail, and as always, painted in bright primary colors. Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat were right there with the humans. Finley had tried half-heartedly to talk them out of it, but in the end, none of them had the heart to say no. He was, after all, Bruin Bear. The Sea Goat they could live with.
This is the good ship Mary Mrs. Trustpot. And no, we didn't name her that. Humans did. Someday I hope to find the human who did it, pin him to a wall, and ask him why in a very determined tone. She has volunteered her services to take you to Harker. She's slow but reliable. She'll get us there.
Where's the crew? I don't see anyone on
board. Shiver me timbers and batter me bulkheads!
They all looked up at the bridge to see a heavily bearded face peering down at them. There were pretty ribbons in his beard, and he wore a large purple hat with feathers and wax fruit on it. He had earrings. Long, dangly ones. He glared down at the humans and adjusted his hat nervously.
Isn't that just typical of humans? Always in a hurry. Stay where you are. I'll come right down. I'm captain of this ship, and don't you forget it.
The face pulled back and disappeared, and a series of loud thuds from inside the ship indicated that the captain was descending to join them. The bear and the goat shared a significant glance and then shook their heads. A door flew open onto the deck, and the captain of the Mary Mrs. Trustpot came hurrying out and headed for the guardrail. He was a pirate captain in full traditional dress, all flashing silks and flounced sleeves, and he balanced precariously on two wooden peg legs. On his left shoulder perched a really scruffy-looking parrot, who clung desperately to the captain's epaulet and studied the humans with a dark and evil eye. He only had the one. The captain grabbed the guardrail to steady himself, lifted his chin proudly, and raised his hat to the humans.
Ahoy there, sweeties! Welcome to the Mary Mrs. Trustpot! Do be sure to use her full name at all times, darlings, or she'll go all sulky and start venting the bilges into the air conditioning again. Delighted to meet you all. I just know we're going to get along tremendously well and have a splendid time on our little adventure. Do come aboard, and we'll have a few drinkies and some nibbles before we shove off. I've made fudge fingers and fairy cakes.
What? Pieces of eight, bugger the mate.
Shut up!
The captain swatted at the parrot with a heavily ringed hand, but the bird dodged with the ease of long practice. The captain glared at it, and the parrot glared right back.
Come along, sweeties. Never keep a good cherry waiting.
As one, the humans turned to look at Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat, who both shrugged uncomfortably.
We did think about warning you in advance, but we couldn't seem to come up with the right words. Basically, he's rebelling against his original characterization. Ever since he became aware, he's been at pains to distance himself as far as possible from his original role. I think the new him is based on a passenger who rather caught the captain's attention. He says he feels much more comfortable the way he is now.
Flynn looked at Toby.
I think I may have found a kindred spirit.
You leave him alone. You'll only confuse him even more. The last thing these toys need is to start worrying about their sexual identity.
Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat looked at each other.
What's sexual?
Toby glared at Flynn.
Now see what you've done.
Tell us about the parrot. Surely it hasn't always been like that.
Certainly not. I don't know who he picked up the language from. Though I have my suspicions.
Bruin glared at the Sea Goat, who looked back innocently.
Any more crew? Are we going to have to stoke the boilers ourselves?
Just the one. The ship takes care of herself, mostly. But Halloweeny will look after all your needs.
The humans just had time to mouth the name and look dubiously at each other, and then there was a loud clattering of bones as the other crew member made his appearance. He came dashing onto the main deck at speed, skidded to a halt by the guardrail, and gave the humans a brisk salute. He was a skeleton, about 4 feet in height, held together by invisible wiring. He wore a rakish bandana around his gleaming white skull and an eye patch over one empty eye socket.
Hi there! I'm Halloweeny, the little skeleton boy. First mate of the Mary Mrs. Trustpot, at your service. Come aboard, come aboard. I just know we're going to have a great adventure together. Anything I can do to make your trip more comfortable, you come and see me.
Now him I like.
Trust me, it gets on your nerves after a while. The truly sentient mind can only stand so much cheerfulness. Beyond a certain point, the urge to throw him overboard, strapped to an anchor, will become almost unbearable. Unfortunately, we're going to have to rise above it, as he's the only one who knows how to keep the ship running smoothly. The captain's good at steering and shouting orders, but beyond that, he's usually lost. So just grit your teeth and smile back at the cheerful little swine. Feel free to throw things. I always do.
Don't mind the goat. He's just being himself.
And I hate all these bright bloody colors. Makes me want to puke.
Halloweeny showed the passengers to their cabins and left them to settle in. According to the rough map the bear had provided, the trip down the river was clearly going to take several days, and in light of that, the humans weren't all that impressed by the accommodations. The cabins were bright and cheerful, like everything else on this children's world, but the rooms held only a hammock, a bookcase full of children's classics, a freezer full of soft drinks and sweeties, and a wash basin. Not long after, when they were underway, the humans met by the guardrail, watching the dark river flow past. The land was already disappearing into the growing dark. Strings of bright paper lanterns illuminated the deck. The humans looked casually about them. The toys were all in the main stateroom, chatting together, leaving the humans alone. The humans kept their voices down anyway. You never knew who might be listening.
All right, let's talk about Harker. The bad toys want him dead because he's human. The good toys want him dead or removed because they see him as a danger. And the toys he's gathered around him will presumably do anything they can to stop us taking him. But what does he want? He's supposed to have a head full of vital Empire secrets. But instead of putting all his efforts into getting in contact with the orbiting star cruiser so someone could come down and pick him up, he's hidden himself away in the heart of the forest, protected by an army of fanatical followers. What has he found there?
The bear thinks Harker has gone crazy. Maybe he thinks Harker is driving the toys crazy as well. That could make them and him really dangerous. Let's not forget, everyone else who went in search of him never came back, people or toys. Nothing was ever heard of them again.
The Red Man. They call him the Red Man now. Red for blood, perhaps?
Wouldn't surprise me. Everything's gone to hell here. This place is enough to drive anyone crazy.
Hush, someone's coming.
It was Halloweeny, a little skeleton boy carrying a tray of steaming hot drinks. He'd switched his eye patch to the other empty eye socket, and now wore a proud three-cornered hat pushed well back on his skull.
Thought you might like something warming. Hot chocolate for everyone! Be sure and wrap up well once the sun goes down. The nights can be very cold here.
Halloweeny waited till everyone had a mug in his or her hand, and then he bustled off about his chores again, happily humming something nautical to himself. The humans sipped at their hot chocolate, found it good, and leaned over the railing to watch the sun sinking slowly below the horizon. The smiley face on the sun had mellowed and looked distinctly drowsy. A rich crimson glow was the only color left in the night, stretched in streaks across the night sky and reflecting darkly on the river. Somewhere birds were singing, a vast chorus of voices proclaiming peace and rest and the day's end.
I think we should all get some sleep.
It's been a long day.
We better set a guard. We should be safe enough as long as we're doing what the toys want. But I think we'll all sleep more soundly knowing there's someone on guard. Just in case. I'll take the first watch.
I'll relieve you in 3 hours, then Toby. The night should be over by then.
Giles found a wall to put his back against, from where he could see most of the deck and the entrances onto it, sat down, drew his gun, and put it on the deck beside him, then drew his sword and laid it across his knees, ready for use. And so he sat, looking out into the night, watching the bright flares of explosions in the night, and listening to their muted thunder, thinking his own thoughts. The toys kept to themselves in the main stateroom, doing whatever it was toys did in the night, and bothered no one. And the great paddle steamer sailed steadily on down the river, into the heart of the darkness. Halloweeny came around in the morning, few hours after the smiley sun had hauled itself back into the sky, knocking respectfully on cabin doors and telling everyone that breakfast was ready in the galley for those who wanted it. Everyone turned up, even Toby, who'd just finished his stint on guard, and was growling at everyone that he wasn't really a morning person.